This special episode of CRST the Podcast is brought to you by Glaukos.
You're listening to
CRST
the Podcast
from Bryn Mawr Communications.
Okay, everybody, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of CRST the Podcast. My name is Paul Singh. I'm a glaucoma and anterior segment surgeon out here in southeastern Wisconsin in the United States. And I'm truly honored and privileged to have an opportunity to spend some time here with Kevin Gilman out in Switzerland here, who's going to share with us some pretty cool groundbreaking research with MIGS and the iStent and OCT and some really cool stuff we'll be getting into. But first, I just want to spend some time here explaining kind of who Kevin is. Kevin, thank you for joining us. Do you mind telling us a little bit about who you are and where you're at right now?
Hi, Paul. Well, thank you very much for this introduction and thank you for having me today. Yes, so I'm Kevin Gilman. I'm a glaucoma specialist in Geneva in Switzerland. Tell you just a bit more about myself. I started my training in glaucoma at the Swiss Glaucoma Research Foundation in Lausanne, Switzerland, back in 2017, where I was a research coordinator. After a few years over there, I moved over to a second fellowship in Moore Fields, where I've worked for a year and a half before starting to work privately in Switzerland while I'm also completing a PhD on the personalization of treatment in glaucoma with Kingston University, and since quite recently working as a visiting instructor at the Bayer Eye Institute at Stanford University. So just keeping my evening busy right there.
That is fantastic. Well, I love having the balance of clinical medicine, private practice with a little bit of academia and research. I think it's a great balance that we're seeing a lot more in not only the United States, but around the world as well. So it's great that you have that kind of balance of research and private practice. And you know, I think that's what's interesting about the space that we're in now is the number of different products and technologies that we have at our disposal. It can sometimes, I think for some of the newer surgeons out there, be a little bit overwhelming trying to understand, you know, when do we use what devices? And I think there's no right or wrong. From my experience, I've used all the different devices from canal dilation to excisional goniotomies to subconcerters and, of course, the stenting. And I think they all give us, especially the conventional pathway, kind of give us that middle teens, kind of on less medications. A lot of it depends on, I think, coverage, what's available to you, comfort level. I think, you know, the conventional outflow pathway is not always equally patent in everybody. So tell me a little bit about kind of your thoughts on the conventional pathway in terms of, do you feel like there's a value to addressing that early on? And this, for those out there who are still thinking about MIGS, why is it so important to adopt MIGS in your perspective?
Well, I think what's quite interesting about that, and from my own personal experience and from the results of all the studies that have been coming out lately, I think we're really showing the value of MIGS for several reasons. First, because we're really showing that addressing high intraocular pressure early on can really have a value, and sparing the patient years of drops can really be something useful. And that's both in private and in public settings, because in private, we tend to rely on MIGS very early on because we've got different type of requests from patients. You know, we don't just want to address IOP. We also want to address patients' lifestyle issues. And some of that involves daily use of drops and medical burden. And just on that point of view, using the MIGS is really something valuable because we're not just treating a disease, we're treating a patient.
Let's say you have a surgeon out there who's a cataract refractive surgeon, has a patient on one PGA and says, you know what, it doesn't matter, I'll just leave the patient on the PGA, not a big deal. You know, what is the value, in your opinion, on getting that patient off that medication? Is that part of your definition of success with a MIGS procedure?
Well, clearly, and to be fair, that would really depend on the patient, but if the patient's complaining about the drops, then definitely that would definitely be a big value to it, because that patient would really see the value on their day-to-day life. If the patient is not so bothered, there's still some benefit from it, because first, well, you're getting some leeway there, because if the pressure goes up again, well, you're back to zero drops, so you can still add plenty of drops before it starts becoming an issue again. And on the other hand, there's that whole issue about ocular surface problems and dryness and scarring of the conjunctiva. So by addressing that earlier on and saving some years of drops, you're basically making your life easier for later on and saving yourself some options. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think the reason I brought that up is because for me, I think a lot of my colleagues, especially many years ago when you know, I was part of the earlier trials and with MIGS and have adopted since 2012 now, and been 10 years. And I still find doctors, you know, not understanding that, you know, sometimes the pressure may be a point or two higher after MIGS. But if they're off the medication, to me, that's still a big advantage. And you know, we have a number of data sets out there. I was part of a data set that was published last year showing in the phase 3 trials compared to the iStent inject versus cataract surgery alone, more patients in the iStent inject group actually had better quality of life improvements, PRO, patient-reported outcomes, better driving, reading speed, et cetera, and less dry eye scores. And that was attributed to being off the topical drops. I think we see with the Hydrus showing us, again, their 5-year data, less visual field progression, that Moorfields have done some great work with that as well, and less need for incisional surgery over time in the studies as well. And even the Light trial, Gus Guzzard's work showing us now 6 years data, showing us that yes, we see still have less need for incisional surgery over time in the groups that had the procedure done SLT. So I think now we're seeing in a number of different MIGS and even laser studies that independently getting people off of drops and that ideas decreasing the compliance issues, I think is a value from an overall prevention of progression of glaucoma over time. And I think that is something we didn't have until recently, but now we have that clear data set out there. And so even if someone doesn't seem like they're non-compliant, to me, even if someone's not obviously complaining that, hey doc, I want to get off these drops or I can't afford them or I can't tolerate them, if they have glaucoma and they're on drops, I'm doing everything I can to get them off the medications, realizing there's peaks and troughs and other compliance issues that we face long-term as well. So with that said, the long introduction, I think it's really, I want to talk to you about, you know, your experience with the iStent inject. I know you said you've had a number of years now of experience with the product and utilizing it. And overall, before we get into your actual study with the OCT, what has your experience been? What is the patient selection for the iStent that you've utilized it in?
So once again, that's very dependent on the setting, because most of my experience comes from Switzerland with the iStent inject. And over there, you'll find that just like in the study I'm going to talk about in a minute, most of the patients have got stable glaucoma. So most of the patients have got mild to moderate open angle glaucoma, stable, and symptomatic cataract. And they're having combined cataract surgery with iStent inject. And actually, that's another thing you'll find in the study we'll talk about soon. The pressure in the end doesn't tend to be that different afterward than before the operation. But what's really changing and what's really making the difference is the number of topical medications they're using.
That's exactly right. And that's the key, I think, what we have to make sure we always realize to ourselves is that it's not the absolute magnitude of reduction, it's the medication burden reduction as well. So part of my definition of success is, are they on the medication and what is their target pressure? If they're at target pressure on less medications, even if it's the same as it was when they're on the meds, but they're off the medication now, that is a huge, huge success to me as well. And so talk more about you. So talk about the study. The iStent inject, these are cataract patients who are symptomatic. They had a cataract with the iStent inject. And so talk about what you're looking at. What was the patient selection again, and really the structure of the study overall?
So in a nutshell, the idea of the study was to study the effect of the iStent inject, but just not on a typical IOP and medication reduction as you would see in most studies, but rather on its effect on the anatomical structure of the iridocorneal angle and Schlemm's canal based on the anterior segment OCT imaging. So talking about the structure of the study very briefly, we selected 25 eyes with mild to moderate open angle glaucoma and symptomatic cataract. And all these eyes underwent cataract surgery combined with dual iStent inject implantation. We followed them up for 12 months and we collected all the usual data, but we also scheduled 2 scan sessions at 6 months and at 1 year postoperatively.
Nice. And so what were you, so with that said, what were your main kind of outcomes that you found with the study?
So the main thing we're really looking at was the position of the iStent, the position of the device within the angle of the eye. We are looking at the size of Schlemm's canal and what we'll call the dilation effect of Schlemm's canal, which is the difference between the major diameter of Schlemm's canal in the unoperated eye with the Schlemm's canal diameter in the operated eye. And we correlated this with the clinical outcomes in terms of pressure reduction and in terms of medication reduction.
And so you took a scan of the patient's eye before surgery and then after surgery?
So not before and after, but we took the scan at 6 months, at 1 year, but both in the operated eye and in the fellow unoperated eye. So that was a control eye.
I see. Okay, absolutely. And you also correlate to the efficacy as well. So let's get into it. Tell us what you found. So, you know, with these patients who had surgery after 6 months, 1 year? What did you find compared to the control eye?
Sure. So just keeping through the usual IOP and medication results for now, just to focus on the real original findings of the study. First, looking at all the OCT scans of Schlemm's canal taken from the iStent inject device a year after surgery, we measured that a major diameter of Schlemm's canal was 191 micrometers, which in comparison, the mean major diameter measured across all fellow unoperated eye was 109 micrometers. So that's roughly a 74.5% difference in Schlemm's canal diameter between operated eyes and unoperated eye at 1 year after surgery. But then the other interesting fact is that Schlemm's canal was not just dilated next to the implanted device. We also looked at Schlemm's canal on a temporal scan of the operated eye when most stents, as you know, are implanted on the nasal side. And there we observed that the major diameter was still almost 50% greater than that of the unoperated eye, which really suggests that we had quite a wide span of effect from the implantation of the stent.
You know, that is such an important finding. And I think that's important because we do, you know, tend to underappreciate, or I guess maybe don't have enough clarity as to how much flow into Schlemm's canal do we really need to get optimal outflow or to get at least a significant effect, right? And we look, we talk about this with how big a goniotomy has to be or trabeculotomy has to be. And even when we look at these iStents being 81 micron lumens, two of those lumens, are they enough to support that we're actually improving outflow and getting fluid into the canal? And it sounds like, and love to hear your thoughts, that even with those two 81 micron lumen stents, we're getting significant enough flow to actually now get well beyond where the eye stents are placed. Is that what you're thinking too as well?
Yes, totally. And I'll admit that was quite a bit of a surprise to find that such a small trabecular bypass could be enough to increase aqueous flow and expand Schlemm canal through 360 degrees without even needing any artificial scaffolding or anything else. But finally, that kind of comes back to what you were saying in your other publication about, you know, conjunctival blanching after any form of trabecular bypass that could sometimes reach, in some cases, up to 4, 5, or even 6 clock hours. And I think that really tells us that even the smallest bypass of the trabecular meshwork could have quite a wide-ranging effect.
Absolutely. And I think it's interesting because when we look clinically, like you said, you know, when we look at the outflow system, right, you know, the limiting factor for flow is the smallest part of the whole pathway, the whole chain, which is the collector channels. And so no matter how much you open up the TM, you can cut the whole TM open. You know, if the size of the collector channels are going to be the limiting factor for flow. So, you know, we kind of realized there's probably a law of diminishing returns where after a certain amount of time, increasing more flow into the canal may not necessarily get us that much better efficacy. And I think we're kind of seeing that clinically where we're all these different MIGS devices, whether you open up 90 degrees, 100 degrees, or two small inner, you know, 81 micron stents, we're still getting that middle teens on less medications, and that's kind of because of the EVP. So I think it's really interesting to see that. And I think what I would love to ask you is, did you get a chance, and you know, you said correlate with outcomes. So did you see a clear correlation with the amount, the size of the dilation, or the degree of how far it went in terms of how far you saw the dilation with efficacy in terms of IOP?
Well, that's an excellent question because that's exactly what we did. So what's really clinically relevant there is that we identified a very clear correlation between what we call the dilation effect, which is basically the difference between Schlemm's canal diameter in the unoperated eye and the operated eye, and the surgical outcome. So basically, eyes in which there was a more extensive dilation of Schlemm's canal were more likely to have a greater reduction in intraocular pressure and or anti-glaucoma medication, which really shows that dilating Schlemm's canal is really a desirable thing. And somehow improving aqueous flow may be enough to just achieve that.
Now, did you find not just efficacy in terms of IOP reduction, but medication burden reduction was also correlated with dilation as well?
Yes, actually. Analyzing with a success definition based both on IOP reduction and glaucoma medication reduction brought the same results. So regardless of your outcome, regardless of whether you want to decrease intraocular pressure or decrease the medical burden, fitting the iStent properly was key in achieving that.
Now, do you think then those stents that were placed in a good position, right, in the canal, but they didn't get canal dilation. Do you think it's just because, like we know from Haiyang Gong's work and other work, that 50% of our patients with POAG have a complete kind of collapse of canal and have herniations that block the ostia of the collector channels? So do you just think those patients just had significant collapse of the canal that just was too much for the flow of the eyes tend to open up? Do you think that's the issue, or do you think there's some other pathology going on?
I think you're probably right. I think that's probably what it is. What we know is when chronic increase of intraocular pressure or very high intraocular pressure can lead to this herniation, causing in the end adhesions. And I think some patients may just have been beyond the point when these structural changes are reversible. The only issue is nowadays we can't really tell which ones are past this stage and which ones are not. So it's very hard to target and select the right patients.
No, absolutely. Did you find also that the longevity of disease correlated with more potential for, let's say, collapse of the canal, or patients who, let's say, did not have a good dilation, did they tend to have more advanced disease or moderate rather, or longer on drops? Any correlation that way?
So we didn't really find any correlation with how long the patient had spent on the drops or even what type of drops they had been on. But there were many confounding factors and confounding variables, because first, we're always implanting two eye stent injects, which is already one thing. And so the position of the stents was a little bit hard to standardize as well in the same time. So that's a lot of confounding factors for just 25 eyes. My personal impression is that it would make a difference, but we don't have anything to verify that just yet.
That would not or would make a difference?
My impression is that it would make a difference.
It would. Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, we know from long-term data that BAK and even PGAs itself can cause inflammation, can cause fibrosis of the not only the canal, but also the collector channels as well. So I do think there's some correlation that longevity of disease with longevity of topical medications with BAK as well can probably have a higher risk of fibrosis, and maybe that cause these not to work as well. But, you know, I know we're running out of time here. I could talk forever. This is so awesome. I love this stuff. So this is published data, correct?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. And could you please tell everybody where it's published so they can look it up? Because it's a great data. Looking forward to looking it up.
So it's published in the Journal of Glaucoma. So the study is called A Prospective Analysis of Eye Stent Inject Microstent Positioning, Schlemm Canal Dilation and Intraocular Pressure Correlation by myself, Kevin Gilman, et al. And that's in Journal of Glaucoma 2019.
That is wonderful. No, I'm really excited for that. I appreciate that. And I'm just going to close off a few more minutes here. I'd love to just kind of get your thoughts on, you know, are you also doing standalone stents as well in your area?
So nowadays we've got a license now to do this. I haven't been doing them much, to be fair, but it's something that I can see is starting to grow in popularity. So I think we're going to get more of that soon.
Yeah, I think, you know, and of course, just to be clear to the U.S. To listeners, this is U.S. label does not include standalone right now. We just got approval for the Infinite, which is a three eye stent inject for the refractory type of patient population. And I think, you know, because the safety is so high with the eye stents, and because we do see very little in terms of refractive changes over time, and follow-up is pretty fairly straightforward compared to some of the other traditional surgeries, I think if we can go back in even more in the moderate to, you know, more a patient who's, let's say, refractory to medications or had a previous surgery, I think we can, going back in there and having the confidence to know, based upon your study as well, that we are really doing more than just opening up a small millimeter area around where we are actually implanting, I think gives me, but also a lot of other surgeons out there, more confidence that, you know, we are doing something more. And I think that gives more confidence to go back in as a standalone versus just in cataract surgery. And, you know, just to give you some information, I'm actually working right now. I have luckily in my in-office surgical suite have the intraoperative OCT technology as well. So now we're doing studies with multiple different devices showing the increase, like you were showing, of the canal dilation. And even you can see the collector channels dilate more right after performing an eye stent. So we did it right before surgery. And we looked at the intraoperative OCT and right after removing viscoelastic and performing irrigation aspiration. And you can see, like you were saying, a larger dilated canal, even a few clock hours away from the stent that was placed. And so that does give you confidence that you are really kind of helping the entire majority of the canal, even though it's not equally patent, you're actually opening up multiple areas as well. But anything, I know we want to close soon. Anything else you want to talk about or any comments you want to make about your study or what needs to be done? What more should we be doing for the future in terms of MIGS or just in the iStent in general?
Well, related specifically to this study, I think, you know, clinically, it all translates into a very simple but very important message about the iStent. It's very minimally invasive, but really their positioning is key. So it is really worth taking that extra minute to make sure where the stent is, that it is just where we want it to be.
But I think it's a great study. Thank you for sharing your data, the rationale for why you did it, the outcomes, and then the relevance to, I think, those of us who are treating glaucoma. Any thoughts, last thing I ask you is, any thoughts on those doctors who are on the edge, still not sure about performing a MIGS procedure like an iStent? Any comments to help convey the importance of considering it?
Well, I would say the whole thing is about, you know, building up that confidence and giving it a try. I think once you're in the eye to do cataract surgery anyway, you've probably done by far the hardest part of the surgery. And in terms of getting started, you know, the companies, whether it be Glaukos or other MIGS company anyway, are really great at providing materials, training materials, being there, setting up dry labs, wet labs, and getting you started with it. So I think, you know, if the patients are keen and asking for it, which is becoming a reality now because we've got more and more expert patients coming with exactly in mind what they want to do and what they've heard of, and you're still wondering and you're not sure whether you want to start, be in touch with whatever company is managing that specific MIGS you're thinking about, and ask them to give you a bit of training just to build up that confidence to get started.
Well said, and I just to dovetail off of what you said, yeah, I think we have a golden opportunity, especially during cataract surgery. You know, just like we want to take care of astigmatism or take care of other ocular surface issues. You know, before and after surgery, you know, we have an opportunity to take care of a disease that can really does happen, unfortunately, cause blindness. We forget that sometimes, but it happens. And the earlier we can treat these patients, the better chance we have of halting the progression. And so for me, it's such an opportunity. So don't lose faith if you guys are thinking about doing it and you haven't done it yet. Still a great opportunity to get going. And as you said, ask all these companies; they'll be more than willing to help you as well. But Kevin, thank you so much for taking the time to share your thoughts and your experiences with me. And I hope everyone out there, you got a chance to learn something new, and please take a moment to read his article, his publication. I think it's fantastic work and a lot more work to be done, but it's great to see that you're doing such great work. Thank you so much again.
Well, thank you, Paul, and thank you everyone for tuning in.
Well, thank you again, everybody, for tuning in to CRST, the podcast. Take care. Thanks again.